these are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at kfarradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into the first Tuesday group of the month, the Laundry House Gang, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And with that, Craig Koppel is already making a speedy exit. I don't know why, but I still have Al and Wayne in here. Mr. Heimer, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Mr. Baird, how you doing?
Excellent, thank you.
Al, you just went through a week of board game stuff, didn't you?
A couple weeks.
I try not to be too accurate at times. I don't want to give the false impression that I'm always accurate.
So, yeah, we had a week's worth of board of game issues, and then we had 4 or 5 days of joint board issues.
With Board of Fish?
With the Board of Fish, yeah.
How'd that go?
Oh, it went really good. Mainly we were taking care of some issues with how AAC's meetings are conducted and who's allowed on them, and you know, some of it was housekeeping.
Explain what the AAC is.
Yeah, what is the AAC anyway?
The AACs are the advisory committees that are set up around the state. Mm-hmm. There's somewhere in the neighborhood of 84 of them on the books.
I guess their job must be to give advice.
Yes, and so
I bet you with 84, you get a lot of committees. Yeah,
so there is a good portion of them that are inactive, okay. Meaning they were established and no longer actively meet. And then their purpose is to give advice to the Board of Game and the Board of Fish, meaning that they have really good insight and knowledge of their area, and you know what's happening out there. So, and they submit proposals. They have, you know, the more urban AAC's advisory committees have monthly meetings, mm-hmm. And more rural people sometimes only have one meeting due to logistics of meeting.
I want to go back to last year when the Fish and Wildlife. They went in and they took 110 grizzly bears approximately in an area.
Oh, yeah.
That was the Department
of Fish and Game. Yeah. Okay.
Don't confuse that with the feds.
Yeah, sorry. You know, I was trying to figure out who did it. You still have people who erupt over such a, they call it a heinous act of wanton waste killing. Yet it was a very specified, directed for predator control.
Right, yeah. So they went to a calving area, two calving areas, and any of the brown bears that showed up on them calving grounds, you know, they eliminated, including black bears and a couple wolves. Mm-hmm. And I didn't bring that information with me, but right now it's pretty compelling that we saved a lot of caribou calves in their first 3 months of life. So that'll help the Mulchatna caribou rebound, and maybe next month I'll bring that data back in, or maybe some more current data.
Yeah, if you could.
Yeah.
I want to let the public know that this was a planned event, not just wanton ways we're going to go out and kill bears. We're looking at game management purely and simple.
Right. So the wolves, some of the wolf skins went to the local communities. A good portion of the black bear meat went to communities that consume black bears. I don't think any grizzly bear meat was anybody wanted to receive, but all those hides that weren't donated to the local communities were put into the, they were salvaged and prepared professionally, and they were sold at a state surplus auction at Fur Rendez last month or so ago.
What would a grizzly bear pelt go for?
If I remember right, they were between, I think they averaged about $600, you know, and that was for the large ones, the big ones, or large ones, the small ones. I have that too. I just didn't bring that. I never know where we're going to go. But yeah, we have records of what bears sold for at Anchorage Auction. And also the one in Fairbanks has surplus department, you know, hides, bears, wolves, buffalo hides. And so, yeah, the public gets a chance to buy those antlers and horns and hides.
You know, Wayne got here early, and we were discussing his issue of his squirrel infestation. And he was probably thinking, well, if I get here early and talk with it with David before we get on there, I don't have to address it on the air. But wrong assumption there, Wayne. How goes your losing battle?
Well, I'm still behind. The spring seemed to have put in a brief appearance the last couple of days, and I noticed the squirrels are running
amok.
Amok, yeah. I haven't seen them chasing each other, but I'm sure they are when I'm not looking. And that just means more squirrels. And
more frolicking means more squirrels.
Yeah, and you know, I've been distracted with other things and have not got my traps fixed up with Al's help.
Just get the 20-gauge out, man. What's this trap stuff?
Well, I want to salvage every squirrel, and so I like to give them
people. Well, with the 20-gauge, you don't have to worry about salvage.
But, you know, I like to give them to people who raise falcons or whatever, and they won't touch them if I shot them with lead. I don't have any steel squirrel
shot. Are you sucking up to Al and his falcon?
I'm doing the best I can to make sure there's no waste. I mean,
With a 20-gauge, there won't be any waste. Don't worry.
Be total waste. But the squirrels are active.
Mm-hmm.
The ice and the chinos, a big open lead in front of my house. Saw two mallards yesterday. And a slow, tiny ice jam moving about 1 foot per minute going down the way. So I was very optimistic. Think we'd have swan habitat available soon, and then today happened.
Yeah, I got Mark from the Kramer's field. He's going to be on the goose watching program tomorrow. He's the biologist or whatever you want to call him, the resident bird aficionado out there. So
I got to go. I've got the troopers trying to, Eric Spitzer and company trying to track down a stolen sled. So I got to be outside a minute.
It's all about Carpo's business.
Can I talk about electricity a minute?
Certainly.
You know, when you think of predator control or an operation like out in the Mulchatna, I think there's a wonderful analog that has to do with electrical current flow. And most of us have heard of Ohm's law. You know, the current flow is the force divided by the resistance. And when you think about an operation like one species being preferred over another, there's really not a lot you can do about the ability of caribou to have babies.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have babies at a more or less constant rate, the best they can do. And if we would like to have more caribou coming into the population and going out for human use, then the only thing we can do is reduce the resistance to caribou population growth. And that means, you know, if you'd like the light to go on in your house, you turn on the switch, which lowers the resistance, and the light comes on every time because you made a connection there. But it actually, what you do is lower the resistance of air, turning it into metal-to-metal contact. And I think if we could get through our heads that what we're doing is by constitutional or statutory mandate trying to get more caribou flow, the only thing we can possibly do is reduce resistance. We can't make the caribou have more babies.
So, you know, with that, you know, you look at the resistance, which is the predator. I find it very telling that they know where the calving grounds are, and they migrate there, is what it sounded like.
The caribou and the predators, it seems.
Yeah.
As I recall, the initial plan out there in the Mulchatna was to, you know, get after bears in such and such an area that was 500 square miles or whatever it was, and they didn't do very well, so they said, well, we'll cut it down to 50 square miles. That's where all the action happened.
Mm-hmm. 50 square miles.
That's pretty
intense. A 5 by 10 mile area.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of activity.
That's what you call a target-rich environment.
Yeah. You know, so those bears that happen to be the majority of, you know, they were trained. They were trained by older bears to
go there.
Where to go in the springtime, just like they're trained to go, you know, to McNeil and harvest fish. You know, it's something that their mothers pass on. And, you know, so this has been going on for quite a while to have that many of bears, you know, ending up on the calving grounds like that.
I got an email link today that had to do with spotted owls. If you can reach way back in your memory,
the early 90s?
Yeah, the big deal over spotted owls. And so we had to stop everything to protect the spotted owl. Well, what has happened biologically is there's another owl called the northern barred owl, which likes the same country and outcompetes the spotted owl. So the northern barred owl now has become a threat to the spotted owl, and the Fish and Wildlife Service, not the state, in the Northwest, has plans to kill 500,000 barred owls to protect whatever
spotted owls
that were out there. So, you know, the resistance to population growth or welfare or put throughput, whatever you want to call it, is about the only thing we can deal with. And if it's the northern barred owl, too bad, buddy. I mean, we like the other owl better.
Yeah, 12-gauge time. Not 20-gauge, it's 12-gauge time. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Buy your set of Bridgestone BlizzX studless snow tires now from the Tire Guys and save. Take advantage of current lower prices on the remaining BlizzX snow tire stock. If you wait until the fall, then you'll be paying next season's higher prices on the new shipments. Be in control of Alaska's winter driving conditions from your pickup to your car. Save now on Bridgestone BlizzX studless snow tires at GCR Tires and Service. The Tire Guys, taming the Alaskan road. Van Horn at Cushman.
It's remote start season at Auto Trim Design. We are the only CopyStar Pro dealer in the interior of Alaska. Our top-of-the-line Pro T13 comes with a rechargeable two-way full-color LCD screen remote, and it's capable of up to 3 miles of range. It's waterproof and has a proximity unlock feature. No more fishing for your keys when your arms are full. We pair it with Drone Mobile, which gives you the ability to start your vehicle from your smartphone or smartwatch. Auto Trim Design is your number one remote start dealer.
KFAR weather.
Slight chance for snow today. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. High temperatures reach up to 15. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight. Lows around zero. About an inch of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night with another dusting Thursday night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Now, Al, as we're in the break, you were bringing up the board game chair directing to the next meeting.
Yeah, so before we get to that, I'll just say that, you know, we had a very productive meeting here in Fairbanks at Pike's Landing, and you know, everything that we changed, or I'll talk about, will change after 1 July. So one thing that was pretty popular was the use of night vision scopes, or thermal scopes.
Mm-hmm.
That got passed for the interior region. You have to have a trapping license. It has to be an open trapping season.
So you can use these to shoot at night?
Right. And you have to abide by the trapping season bag limits. And so that was a step into seeing if it would be abused like some people perceive people being able to use night vision to abuse that privilege.
I can remember back 25 or 30 years ago when night vision optics were just being developed for the military primarily. And there was a huge concern among some managers in the department that this would be unethical if we ever allowed this and people would be shooting everything at night, and on it went. And that sort of led to the ban that recently has been modified, right?
Right. So, yeah, that perception's out there. So we'll see. Generally, I think sportsmen, hunters, do a pretty good job of, you know, trying to conform to regulations. The other thing that was pretty popular at this meeting was we lengthened a lot of grizzly bear seasons, especially in the springtime going into like the 15th of June. It seems like, you know, through data, we have very healthy grizzly bear populations, and we're not utilizing all that opportunity, so we lengthened quite a bit of brown bear seasons. But again, it won't be effect for this spring. It'll happen after 1 July. Another thing that's going to be a big change in the Fairbanks area.
So basically, your regulations start on the fiscal day of the year.
1 July.
Here's fiscal day of the year.
Yeah. And so, the other big change that moose hunters will see in the interior, all of Unit 20, is you'll have to register to go moose hunting now. You won't go to Walmart and pick up a green card and go moose hunting. You'll actually have to register either online or...
Where's Unit 20 at?
20. It's all of the Fairbanks is 20A, 20B,
20C,
20D.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Does that help management or populations, or what's that about?
It's about collecting data. It's about hunter effort that we have very little data on. You know, people get a green card. If they don't kill anything, they don't turn it in.
Is there a sunset on this?
No.
It's forever.
Well, it's for at least 3 years, because people can write proposals to the Board of Game to change regulations every 3 years in the interior, you know, in the regions, mm-hmm. on a three-year cycle. So it's there as long as it, until another board changes it.
Mm. Craig, you think that's going to affect your hunting optics?
No, I mean, I missed part of the call, and I was out for part of it, but you're talking about the new, the July 1 night vision.
Well, that was one of them, and then we were talking about moose registration
yeah.
for this season.
So what do you mean the optics?
Is it going to slow you down?
No, we always play by the rules. We're going to play by the rules. I'm more concerned with, the lack of moose in the area I hunt just from that rain 2.5 years ago, and it's still a big effect. I talked to, by the way, a friend of mine who traps over in the Circle area, and they've got about a dozen wolves this year out of a pack that was probably 12, 22 or 24, and they have a 118-mile trapping trail, and all winter long they have not seen one moose. They got a dozen wolves. I haven't seen a single moose.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, having to register will certainly slow me down in 28.
Ready for a phone call?
Sure.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with the Laundry House Gang, and your name is?
This is Phil.
Hello, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm good. I wonder if there's any change in the status of the moose population.
I got it.
What's that now? Change in the status of the moose population?
Yeah, because they had the hunt going for a while, and then they shut it down.
Al, you want to tackle that one?
The moose population in which area?
Down there by the Minto Flats. You know, they had that antlerless hunt.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, that moose population is down. It's been down, you know, because of the two bad winters. And that's not scheduled to have an antlerless hunt right now.
I a whole bunch of wolves down there. My sons have hunted down there extensively, and they've had wolves within just a few feet of them.
Yeah, there's several good trappers down there that have been, you know, really getting on the wolves. They're usually good for about a dozen apiece down there. So, it wasn't a predation. I mean, it adds to it, but the bad winters is what, and the deep water was what was hurting the moose in the Mento area.
Oh yeah, those flats got flooded.
Thank you for the phone call. Greatly appreciate it. Have a great day. And, Craig, you know, are you having problems with my North Korean equipment in here?
I am, yeah.
You're breaking it, you're dropping it, you're changing it. You know, welcome to my hood. It's Mr. Pruz's neighborhood.
Yeah. It says Fisher Price on the side of it.
No, it says something North Korean Fisher Price.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
But I got it working now. I can't hear myself, but I can. Oh, there we go. Ooh, okay, it's working.
you have relevant help from a guy who has one of his headphones on backwards.
That's because there's static in this one, and it's clear. In
North
this
Korean area. Static.
You know, Fairbanks, not only do I have to put up with the purple padded walls, but I got purple padded personalities in this room too.
Yeah,
my goodness. Wayne, any comments on the?
Yeah, I know that having to register will slow me way down in unit 20, particularly if you have to do it online. You know, as I don't do real well online. In fact, I stopped giving up applying for permits when you had to do that online, and I don't really harm the moose population very much over there, but I do turn in my little green card every year, and sometimes they don't know that I turned it in. Yeah. So I don't know why I should be the one to have to pay for someone else's incompetence. Not to be nasty.
Right. But, you know. So, I mean, yeah, you can do it online in your own home, or you can go down to Fish and Game and they will do it with you. Or any licensed vendor that has internet access.
Well, they will do it with me online?
Yes.
That'll be swell. It's like buying a gun. I love that.
So the other thing that was kind of huge to me at this last Board of Game meeting was we had, probably close to a dozen sheep proposals for 19C, and 19C has been a hot topic for...
Or 16.
16, so a little over a dozen there. And the board chair decided to defer all those proposals to the next statewide meeting.
Which is when and where?
It'll be next year, either February or March. I don't have it right off the top of my head.
Why did he decide to do such a thing?
So because last year, last cycle, there was a board-generated proposal asking, you know, the board to do something with sheep hunting in 19C. And when the smoke cleared, the board, the majority of the board, voted to close the entire non-resident portion of 19C, so there was no more opportunity for non-residents to harvest sheep. And then they agreed to form a subcommittee for 19, it was a 19C sheep working group, to see if they could come up with a different or a new management plan for 19C. So that group hasn't decided anything since its creation, except who the members are. And so my opinion is the chair didn't want to address, you know, 19C sheep proposals, which is fine if he would have told the public that up front, because now the public submitted proposals, the advisory committees that commented on it, you know, spent time and energy creating comments for him, and then the public, you know, also participates in public comments and came to the board and publicly testified.
I worked my fingers to the bone on that issue.
So, you know, it's kind of, it's one of those things that can happen, but I don't like it when the public process is, you know, kind of circumvented a little bit.
Yeah. Also, yes, Wayne.
There's a history behind that I would share with you if you care.
Certainly.
Well, the Board of Game has a certain responsibility by law, and there are a few things they can't do. One of the things they can't do is they can't do administrative stuff, and they can't spend money. Well, they don't have any money to have a working group, and years ago they coerced the then department into paying about $250,000 to have a working group, which was a colossal failure that was facilitated by, I think, the same guy they're hoping to get back this time.
What do you think? A quick phone call?
Yeah.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with the Laundry House Gang, and your name is?
This is Ron, David. And
hello, Ron.
Just a quick exposure, I suppose, but I think I heard one of your guests admit to being a rotary dial 3 on the tree type, and it's good to know that I'm not alone.
That would be me.
Ron, birds of a feather flock together. Welcome to the club.
Flip phone Heimer.
Yeah. You have a great afternoon, buddy. We'll see you later. Yeah, there's you have brethren there, Wayne.
Yeah. Well, that's good. But the story I was kind of hoping to tell is that and it gets to be a little probably legally questionable, but the board can't do administrative, it can't do administration. And they want to make a group to make a plan. Now, what could be more administrative than that?
Than making a plan to make a plan.
Yeah, that sounds like administration to me.
True.
And they'll need money to do that. The commissioner denied being bullied into paying for it again, and they've gone to outside funding to hire the same guy that couldn't make it work last time, but with fewer people to jump into the department's business and make a management plan. That's wrong.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. Mm-hmm. You got some Michael Jackson, some Fox News, some state news, some commercials, and some weather, and we'll be back.
I'm going to moon dance.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Paris speaking with the French foreign minister about the ongoing war in the Middle East.
Both of us agree on the need to get to the quickest possible ceasefire, to allow the release of hostages, to enable the surge and sustainment of humanitarian assistance. As I mentioned, we're coordinating closely when it comes to Lebanon and trying to prevent any spread of the conflict there, finding a diplomatic way forward.
Well, it comes after an Israeli airstrike targeted the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Syria, killing a top Iranian military leader. Iran says a swift retaliation is imminent. President Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping had a phone call. They talked about Taiwan, AI, and security issues. This was meant to demonstrate a return to regular leader-to-leader dialogue between the two powers. The White House called it candid and constructive. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KTVF reports that education funding for the state of Alaska has hit another roadblock as the U.S. Department of Education has designated Alaska as a high-risk grantee. According to a press release from the state Senate majority, the reason for this designation is that Alaska allegedly failed to fund four school districts at the same levels as previously in 2021 and 2022, while at the same time utilizing American Rescue Plan Act funds. Doing so violated what are known as maintenance equity requirements, a condition of receiving the ARPA funding. This lessening of the funding and the Senate majority came as a result of lower enrollment numbers in the four districts, which include the Fairbanks North Star Borough. In December, the federal government gave Alaska's Department of Education and Early Development 30 days to demonstrate that they were making efforts to solve the discrepancy. This initial federal deadline was not met, according to the press release. Unless this happens, Alaska could lose $425 million in federal funding. The Senate Education Committee has scheduled an emergency hearing set for this Wednesday.
Online at KFAR660.com.
I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Watching those geese drop by. My, my, my. I'm a goose watcher. I'm a goose watcher. Here comes one now.
Springtime is goose watch time, and that means the return of the geese to Kramer's Field is just around the corner. Win $500 in cash courtesy of Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware just for guessing when the first flock of Canada geese arrives. Enter Goose Watch 2024 at Frontier Outfitters in the Gavora Mall or Century Hardware in the North Pole Plaza Mall. If your guess is the closest to the official time and day, you win $500. Visit KFARradio.com for details and official rules. Must be 18 or older. Be a goose watcher and win $500 cash.
I'm a goose watcher. Here comes one now.
You know that the Fairbanks Hearing and Ballot Center prides itself in having the best qualified professional and licensed audiologists in the state. They're proud to announce the addition of Dr. Alexandria Jackson to their team. Dr. Jackson hails from Texas and is passionate about helping patients with hearing and balance dysfunction challenges, and she specializes in diagnosis of both adult and pediatric patients. She joins the experts and medical professionals at the Fairbanks Hearing and Ballot Center, where they can help you with your hearing loss. Find out more at fairbankshearing.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. And it was funny listening to the public service that Craig Compa was giving there in regards to theft of snow machines and their sleuthness of trying to get the guys who did it.
Yeah, there's and kudos to Spitzer and company over at the Troopers. They're really on it. But, yeah, there's some snow machines were stolen, not from our place, but from a private area, and they're looking for the people. The people are driving around looking for it. I don't know if it was a group of people and somebody took it to get it reprogrammed, whatever, but they're looking for this machine. So these people are not, you know, good Samaritans.
So none of the proposals for the sheep were introduced.
No, they were just deferred till next year, so they'll come back up. You know, in defense of the chairman, you know, he was hoping that, you know, his working group would come up with something so they could discuss it. You know, and that's just a working group. It's three members, so that's still not a majority. They couldn't have a majority. So even with all that work and money that's going to be spent, you know, the board could ultimately say, well, we don't agree with your plan. And...
yeah.
Not take, you know, not
Yeah. Ready for a phone call, gentlemen? You okay, Craig?
Yeah. Yeah. I need a lozenge or something.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with the Laundry House Gang, and your name is?
Hey, this is Dan.
Hello, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm well. Back in the saddle here. I was observing the conversation about how you cannot entice caribous into being frisky. Obviously, you didn't consult with the resident frisky master there. I mean, anyone who can entice peregrine falcons to breed must have something to do or a plan for caribou.
You know, I concur with that. I absolutely concur. And the person, the resident falcon person, Al, how do you entice caribou to become frisky?
I don't know. Full disclosure, I'm not a falconer. It's my wife who's a falconer.
Close enough. Yeah. You're related to it.
Maybe you can build a pipeline that would induce it.
I was actually referring to Craig Campo. He might have somebody that airdrop pheromones or something. And that is all. Have a nice day, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. There's nothing like a little bit of competition between rivals. And
Man. Are you sure you're going to take that play? Are you sure there's no peregrine falcons in the
building? Don't say a word, Craig. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
Harry.
Your name is again?
Harry.
Hello, Harry.
I was wondering about the date for the moose hunt. Who picked them, and how did they pick them? It used to be...
moose hunt dates.
Oh, so the moose hunting dates. When we look at like moose hunting dates and ACE advisory committees or the general public asks, you know, for earlier opener or later opener, generally it goes down to when the harvest is occurring. So as you know, if you go later into September and into October, you're starting into the moose rut, you know, when they're really in rut, and they become very susceptible to harvest then because it's the rut and they're not
cantankerous and
yeah, exactly. So
frisky moose expert.
Generally, the way I kind of look at it is, you have to have a sustainable population out there, mm-hmm. and so you don't want to over harvest your bulls, and you play with that on when the harvest is occurring, and so if you have, you know, if you have lots of moose and abundant of moose, you can go later on in the year. And then the other side is how many people are trying to get that moose. So you got hunter effort to play with, and you kind of manage, you know, hunter effort, your population, and what's sustainable out there to adjust your dates.
When you look at something like global warming, which is small and big, by the way, but 1 through 20 or 1 through 15 September, it's way warm. I mean, you'd almost have to have a walk-in freezer to process the moose.
Yeah, oddly enough, the global warming and the breeding season generally have very little to do with each other. My belief is, and I got a bona fide doctor to the left of me anyways, that, moose come into heat and, you know, it's a biological clock and it's usually works off of, you know, the sunlight and moon phases and not so much what the temperature is. And I would remind that, you know, a lot of Alaskans,
not unlike humans,
you know, that were here 40 years ago or longer, we had many moose hunting opportunities in the month of August, you know, locally.
Yeah. When I first started moose hunting as a teenager, it started like the 20th of August.
Right. So, you know, people that hunt that early have to have, you know, the capacity or the knowledge on how to handle meat in warm weather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, Craig was one of those frisky caribou type guys, and
frisky and caribou. I don't know if those have been used in the same sentence for a long time, but yeah, caribou.
Craig, I don't want to hear the story.
No. No, you're not going to hear that one. It is amazing when you're hunting caribou that when you're in a boat and they're on the side of the river, you can tell the ones that have probably never seen a human before. And I tell everybody when we're hunting, don't say anything when you see, hey, caribou, just point. Don't say anything. We'll find a place to stop. But if you say anything, they hear the boat coming and the tone of the boat doesn't scare them. They're curious, right? And then they're just staring at you. But as soon as you say something, boom, they dart. So we try and get as close as we can. Then we, chop the boat and get a shot. Yeah. But it's amazing. And there's been times where one of my buddies ran aground and the caribou was, my daughter got a caribou. And then this other one's walking across the river, a bull. And he's high and dry on a gravel bar. He didn't have plastic on the bottom of his boat. He's trying to follow me, and he got hung up. And as it's walking across, he just hit a horn on his boat, and it turned around like, are you talking to me? And he dropped it. I always tell him it's like a grouse with four legs as far as brain capacity.
They're curious critters, having been out and about. I've heard that you could just wave your white hanky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. They'll come over there and have a look sometimes.
Down with paper plates, they come right at you.
I was floating the Hohelet one time, and we came across this moose rack in the long grass. And it was, oh, my goodness. So, and then about 50 yards down from me, you saw the poles that was hanging. And then we float down about another 200 yards, and here's another rack in the grass. And I go, oh, man. But also I saw this ear pop up. And so it's a moose laying down. And we're getting ready to float past it. So how do you get the moose to stand up? I go, hey, moose, stand up. And it stood up, heard my voice. And then he got blasted with a 460 right down. So that was my famous moose call.
Yeah.
Hey, moose, stand up. That's one of those fun things. In Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. Getting some good phone calls. And Craig will probably be a little bit frisky in the purple padded room over the break.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Tune in to Shooter's Corner, your source for news and conversation regarding guns, local events, and your Second Amendment rights, with your host, Laura Berkowitz. Sponsored in part by Auto Trim Design, an Alaskan company offering products that help you get the most out of your car or truck. Moose lights, auto starts, bug shields, spray-on bed liners, signs, graphics, and more. Visit Auto Trim Design and listen in every Thursday morning at 11 to Shooter's Corner, right here on KFAR Radio. Unexpected injuries happen, can be expensive, and time-consuming. McKinley Orthopedics and Sports Medicine is the first orthopedic urgent care in Fairbanks. Their team of board-certified surgeons, physicians, and physician's assistants are all trained in orthopedic and sports medicine. Sprains and strains to dislocations and broken bones, McKinley Orthopedic and Sports Medicine's professionals are standing by to help. No referrals are needed, and walk-ins are welcome. Open extended hours from 8 to 8 Monday through Friday and 10 to 8 on Saturdays. Visit McKinleyOrtho.com or stop by on Geist Road, right across from Hutchinson High School. Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
Overcast skies this afternoon with a slight chance for snow. Daytime highs approaching 15. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows dip down to around zero. Tonight, partly cloudy. About an inch of snow tomorrow through tomorrow night with another dusting Thursday night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Hopefully you're enjoying our show, and we're going to take a phone call real quick. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
Tom.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I turned on the radio and I heard you guys all talking about animals and stuff, but the little idea out there, has anybody come up with the Fairbanks could use like a little zoo or something? And I hear all those brown bears or whatever got shot or whatever, but couldn't they like make like a little zoo? I don't know where they would put it.
I think we could put it in the $33 million animal shelter.
Boy, was that a... That was, Fairbanks, that was not a stage phone call. Thank you, Tom.
We used to have a zoo right at Alaska Land.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a wiry moose, and what else did we have there?
The black bear. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably a...
It wasn't much of a zoo, to tell you the truth. And whenever they fed the bear, you know, it was like the most dangerous event in the world. They'd have a guy covering the guy who's throwing the food in there with a 12-gauge shotgun, you know, and it was black bears just looking at him going, you know, one day I'm going to die, and it's not going to be from eating you guys. So.
I think the risk management department took a second look at it.
Yeah, my goodness.
Let's let San Diego have the zoo.
And Craig wanted to get into a conversation about a federal judge.
I do, yeah. So we have a federal judge that, and I'm penning a guest opinion letter. I don't know if I'll make it or not, but it's something we've been struggling with for a long time. In 2011, Tony Knowles recommended Sharon Gleason to be the first female federal judge in the District of Alaska. Which was a historic day, which is going to be the name of a historic day. But the historic part is that this judge has probably cost us more in jobs, economic growth, and access than any other person I can think of.
In the history of Alaska.
In the history of Alaska. And she consistently sides with the feds on issues. I'll give you a couple examples. Obviously, there was the Chukchi Sea, Trump. They approved some drilling in there, and she immediately said his decision was illegal. There was the Eisenbeck Road issue, which we've talked about before, from Cold Bay to where does it go from Cold Bay to the other side of the island or whatever. But there was just a gravel road the residents wanted because when they got ill, they couldn't get to the ferry or they couldn't get to the an airplane, and they were dying. People were dying, and so they begged for a road. Under Trump, the road was approved, and it was just going to be a gravel road, 12 miles, I think? 12 miles?
It was going through the Eisenbeck Wildlife Refuge.
Right.
And we did some training.
So it was all approved. Everything, the locals were happy. We're going to save lives, and Gleason votes against or says we can't do it. And I remember one of the arguments, Russian ducks occasionally fly over where this road would be. And, of course, you don't want to stress out a duck by having them fly 45 miles an hour over the top of a road. I mean, that wouldn't be fair to the duck, would it? But
well, only if you're shooting from the road.
Yeah. I mean, then she was against the Willow Project. It's just one thing after that. Now, we got a new decision Friday. On the Kuskokwim River, where the feds get to override the state's management authority on this, which is against the Constitution. It's why we became a state.
What about sturgeon?
Good point. Yeah, there's a good example. So this thing, hopefully the governor's going to take this one all the way to the Supreme Court, and hopefully the same people that, or most of them, or a lot of them, that voted unanimously twice for sturgeon will do the same decision here. But the problem is, this just happens over and over with this judge. I don't know what we do about it. I don't know how, you know, I just...
You don't get to retire him.
No.
Or vote him out.
No,
it's... them to retire themselves.
Yeah, we got it. It's just ridiculous. It's just a number of... I'd love to see a spreadsheet of the amount of dollars of lost revenue, lost income the state has incurred because of this decision, because of one judge that consistently sides with the feds.
Or the additional cost that... We already know what the answer is going to be if it's a state issue.
Yeah.
You know what it costs the state to get to the next one.
Oh, yeah. It's just a waste of money. We're having to fend ourselves all the time. So,
well, it's April, gentlemen. April 1st was yesterday. Craig's been going around with his little placard there for 36 hours.
My Satterberg joke.
His Super Bowl was yesterday. But it's April, and Craig, what recommendations would you give to people to go either hunting or fishing in April in locations?
Well, yeah, that's a good one. We're kind of almost in the middle. It's almost going to get too dangerous to ice fish, right, pretty soon.
So you better get out of the way early then.
Yeah, out of the way early. Well, I mean, there's still areas, obviously, the lakes. There's a lot of ice on them, but, river fishing, burbot fishing and stuff like that. I just got back from the Good Pasture. We haul a bunch of fuel behind snow machines up there, and the river was better than I've ever seen it. This is a week ago Saturday. It was flat and, I mean, beautiful until you get to the North Fork, and we had to turn around and leave our gas down low just because you got to be careful this time of year, especially when you get where the water's faster, the higher rivers. Really not hard to put a machine, you know, through the ice.
So what's your recommendation other than gas, you know?
I would stay in town and come over for the last couple of days of Compo's Ski-Doo Spring Order Program, which ends Friday at 6 o'clock.
That's hunting for a good deal.
Yeah, hunting for a good deal, absolutely.
Al, what would your recommendation be?
I know spring bear hunting's getting kicked off. People are, you know, have some access with their snow machines to get their baits in or start getting them ready to put in. I think it's the 15th of April that you can actually start doing that. And you know, as these lakes thaw out, you know, it gets to be excellent fishing when the ice is about 10 feet off the shore. Mm-hmm. And you can throw your bait on the ice and then let it drop off the edge of the ice shelf there. And it's really productive for catching, you know, local fish in the pond.
They're hungry and they got oxygen.
Yeah. And it's a really good time to catch really nice fish.
Wayne, what's your thought?
I think just try and enjoy things. I don't have any plans to do anything very big, except there's a big sheep meeting at the end of April.
What's your recommendation for people?
My recommendation is go out in the morning early before the sun comes up and listen for a great horned owl. Or maybe while you're standing around, you could hear a woodpecker pounding on an old cottonwood tree, and enjoy those sorts of things while you can.
Hmm. I guess my recommendation is to go to your house and shoot some squirrels.
Well, that would be fine.
If you could, you'd have a target-rich environment.
Yeah, I want them to be salvaged. So try and figure out some way to kill them without leaving any lead trace.
What is the owl that in Oregon that created all the spotted owl? So I glanced on an article. Did any of you guys see that about the?
We talked about it
when I was out. Okay, you talked about it. All right.
While you were trying to apprehend people, we were talking about the spotted owl. Scourge again.
Okay.
From early 1990s.
Yes. But they're killing thousands of owls to protect the spotted owl now, right?
Half a million. They're planning.
Is it like open season, or is it just the feds go get them?
I think the feds are going to do it. I don't know how you kill half a million northern barred owls. That would be quite a chore.
Yeah, I have a question. So a friend of mine had got a bunch of these wolves in the Charlie River region. They had a... he got three callers, and he took them to parks, or he called Park Service, and he says, "Do I have to turn these in?" He said, "Yeah, you know, you have to turn them in." And the Park Service rep told him they had 24 callers; they're down to three, and they haven't got the other ones back. Apparently, I'm not sure what. But my question was, they get those callers are $2,500, but what does it cost the federal government to put the collars on each one of these animals? Do you have any idea what those costs are in manpower and time? And
it's all.
And what's the process? I mean, what are they?
Well, first of all, they have to get a permit from the Department of Fish and Game to use telemetry, which is maybe a little outdated because they're using GPS satellite collars. So once they get a permit and...
there's an employee that has to request the permit, an employee that has to process it, and so forth. So there's some cost there.
And so it really depends on logistics, you know, where they can, you know, set up planes to find wolves and then have helicopters to go in and dart them. And
that's
so the closer you are to things like gas and communities is less of a cost than having a remote operation.
But when you're out in the Charlie River, you're not really close to
town.
You're
not really close to town.
No, and so I'm just wondering, do they do an analysis of what those costs are?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So they know what it is. They don't want to share
public information. I'd like to know what that costs, what it costs for them to tag these wolves, and then they get $25 back for the collar they used to.
I haven't heard of anybody receiving any financial...
Oh, I thought you were going to say, have anybody returning a collar? Yeah. I know there's one hanging at Don Young's office. Have no idea where that one came from.
So,
but yeah.
But that's all public information.
It's expensive, you know.
Yeah,
it's
sure. Expensive. Well, you used to do that. You used to collar.
Yeah, that was way back. You know, we didn't use that much helicopter back, and we tried it a while and didn't find out it wasn't that suitable for our purposes with sheep. But, you know, I don't know what a helicopter costs these days, but it's a lot more than it used to be.
Oh, a couple grand an hour, I imagine.
Yeah.
$1,500.
It's expensive, and it's risky. You know, it's not a recommended aerial maneuver.
Well, kudos to my buddy because they've taken about a dozen of these wolves out of there, and so a couple of them they took down to them because they were all mangy. There's a black that was real mangy, and whatever, so they took it back.
It was
service.
A common theme this year with a lot of wolves. It's not mange; it's follicular dysplasia. Is, you know, most people associate that with mange, but it's
a. So you're looking for a
fleckless wolf? What is the word?
If we could get them to be
frisky
feckless,
wolf.
We'd be
frisky
feckless.
Wolf. Frisky.
Yeah, feckless, frisky wolves, that'd be fine. We tried that birth control thing.
Yeah. So tomorrow you have the Laundry House Gang meeting?
Yeah, we do.
And where's it at?
Tannenaw Valley Sportsmen's Association at noon.
Bring your own lunch?
Yeah. Bring your own lunch.
Yeah. If anybody's got an issue out there regarding wildlife or access that they want to bring up, you're always welcome. We don't lock the door on anybody. And if it's an issue that we want to get behind, we'll do what we can to get behind it. Right now, we're working on some amendments that they're trying to pull strip money out of a fund that helps the PADS unit there at the state, which is doing really good work on 2477s and other stuff.
I think somebody came up with a great idea to use the Long Trail money on a trail from Cordova to Chittenden.
Yeah, well, it'd be better use of it, right? I mean, instead of a trail that nobody's going to, you know, I don't know how many 70-year-old people getting off a cruise ship are going to hike up to Nenana and beyond. But
the other thing I seen this morning, I wasn't aware of it, I'm usually try to stay on top of things. There's a House bill, HB 926, I believe, which is going to increase fishing licenses. It's going to be a fishing license surcharge for access. The state resident cost will be $4 per license, and then the non-residents pay substantially more. If you want a comparison, if a resident buys an annual fishing license, it'll cost them $4 more if this is passed. And if this is passed, a non-resident that buys an annual fishing license, it'll cost them an extra $40.
So 10 times.
10 times more than what a resident's going to pay.
Who's sponsored?
It came out of rules by the governor.
Okay.
And so what it seems like, next month I'll check back with you, but because I had some phone calls in to find out, but it seems like there's, you know, Dingell Johnson money, which is a federal excise tax on fishing equipment, and states like Alaska really benefit it, but they have to, you know, every dollar they can match, they get three back. And so I think this is a tool that there's more federal dollars not being used, and we can create some more access to fishing and viewing opportunities, you know, getting out. So that's something that's going to have a hearing, I think, Wednesday. Hmm. In the legislature, so I'll tune into more of that. I just caught it this morning.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, we got about 2 minutes left. Well, closing comments from Mr. Wayne.
I don't have any. I've already done my evil work for the day.
Mr. Barrett.
Yeah, I'm gonna sit back and, like Wayne, I like going out in the morning and sitting on my chair and listening to the birds. I got a bird feeder out there, so that's been kind of exciting. You know, seeing different birds show up and unwind from this month of meetings.
And for those that missed it yesterday on your show, David, we have signups at the shop for if you've got an ATV or a side-by-side, you can run in this year's Midnight Sun Run. You're going to have to wait till all the people in Elvis suits and stuff, the last batch, go out. We're going to do a mass start. You got to be 16, nothing bigger than an 850, and you got to keep it under 45 miles an hour. And obviously this story was aired yesterday, the 1st of April, so take that for what it's worth.
Did you find your bond that I required?
Yeah, no, we didn't get that far. But people were asking, well, where are the entry fee funds going to go? And it's going to go to pay for our booth at the fair so we can educate people more on the on-road ATV and side-by-side stuff. So,
happy birthday to Ralph Seekins yesterday.
Good for Ralph.
Marsha Hajdukovic's birthday April 1st. Bill Satterberg, who you could have read about in the paper.
It's the day I retired from fishing game.
Oh, wow.
For those that miss it, too, you can read the local attorney Sue's crossing guard involved in road rage incident story on Compo's website, on the Compo's Facebook page. We have a copy of the article if you missed it. Excellent. Excellent.
Craig has his own outdoor show, but far be it for him to not take advantage of these opportunities.
Saturday at 12:30 on KFAR.
And what's at 1 o'clock, Craig?
1 o'clock? I never listen to it after my show, Dave. I don't know. Is Fairbanks Foodies?
Yes, it is.
There you go.
It
used to be 5 o'clock. You got bumped up, huh?
I'm the OG, man.
OG.
I'm the OG. Fairbanks, you have a great day, and I will see you tomorrow.
All right.